This week, we're looking at how China is gaining influence with U.S. allies in Asia. We heard from Vietnam, where analyst Lei Hong-hyep told us Hanoi is finding itself in the middle of a new Cold War.
The U.S. and China are entering a new Cold War, and the two powers will expect Vietnam to take side.
We looked at Pakistan, where analyst Shamila Chaudhry told us Chinese economic investment has led to military cooperation as well.
Pakistani political insiders will tell us that, look, the U.S. wasn't offering us what we needed anymore, and China was knocking on our doors, so we're gladly taking their help.
Yesterday, we looked at the Philippines, where President Rodrigo Duterte is getting closer to China while maintaining a longstanding defense relationship with the U.S. So today, as we wrap up our series, let's check in on Indonesia. And joining us now is Evan Laksmana, who is a senior researcher with the Center for Strategic International Studies in Jakarta. Evan, how would you describe the relationship that Indonesia has with China right now?
I think to sum it up, I think it's full of ambivalence. I think on the political side, Indonesian politicians are always easily painted as a potential foreign lackey if they're seen as too close to China. But when it comes to foreign policy, we are also very much non-aligned, so we cannot be seen as too pro-China or too pro-US in that sense. But also because we're also dealing with a lot of bad historical and social legacy of violence against ethnic Chinese Indonesians over the past few decades. So being seen as this tough spot between pro-China because we need its economic engagement, but also we cannot be seen as too close or we'll risk huge domestic backlash. So it's a very tricky position for the government to be in.
Well, and give us more of a sense of what you're talking about with the history between Indonesia and China.
So when it comes to the social elements, there's a long history in which ethnic Chinese Indonesians are perceived as a small minority but extremely wealthy. And I think that creates all kinds of political manipulation and resentment among the larger political elite. And up until, during the Cold War, we ended diplomatic relations with China from 1965 up until the 90s. So there was a long hiatus in which we don't have any ties with China, and which was only restored in the 90s. So I think right now we're just trying to re-engage China economically, but that's creating whole kinds of potential domestic backlash. And it's not even talking about the potential security concerns that Jakarta has with the South China Sea and all that.
Well, we'll get to the issues in the South China Sea, but first of all, how would you describe the Indonesian relationship with the United States right now?
I think with the U.S., it's always been up and down. With Obama, it was the up period. We had a framework for strategic partnership that's been growing and more developed. But I think with Trump, I think we're just hitting the point of ignorance in the sense that we're ignoring the rhetoric coming out of Washington. Yes, the U.S. is still an important part of our thinking, but it's no longer the most important player. And especially because I think for the past 20 years, the biggest question mark has always been, what will China's rise do to us? But right now, I think the biggest question mark is, what kind of scandal will we see coming out of Washington? So I think the sense of uncertainty that's coming out of Washington is making us harder to keep track, and we're just going to put the U.S. on the sidelines for now.
And when you talk about the strategic partnership with the United States, is that more military-based or economic?
The framework that Obama laid with the previous president, Yudhoyono, is broader. It has a people-to-people relationship framework, like scholarships, exchanges, visits, and all that. And then there's the economic components, obviously, the business ties and investment, but also the political and security elements. So it's a comprehensive partnership across various government-to-government, as well as people-to-people ties.
Well, because Indonesia has the world's largest Muslim population, and it has been an important ally with the United States in terms of dealing with Islamic extremism.
Yeah, I think since 9/11, the security relationship revolves around both the a counterterrorism element as well as the military element. And that's something that's a bit harder to sort of restore, because in the 90s, the U.S. actually put a sanction on Indonesia for its alleged human rights abuses in East Timor. So the military-to-military ties were only slowly recovering by the mid 2010s or so. So I think that's still a slow progress. But I think the political engagement with the previous administration was not just about a counterterrorism, but it's also about how to promote religious pluralism, how to strengthen democratic capacity, and how to broaden the civil society space. So it's not just about terrorism or Islamic extremism.
Are there military ties between China and Indonesia?
There is. I think in the past few years, there's been much more frequent visits and exchanges. There's a small number of exercises for the army, particularly when it comes to the special forces. There's some small amount of defense technological cooperation, but that's very slow. Some small amount of arm purchases and a small number of education exchanges. But the scale of security and military ties between Indonesia and China are nothing compared to the scale of U.S. and Indonesia military ties that's been going on for a lot longer and much more deeper than any other country.
Okay, well, let's get to the issue with the South China Sea. Indonesia is planning to develop fishing grounds in order to push back against China's encroachment. Tell us about what the concerns are or what the conflict is there in the South China Sea.
So there's two separate sets of issues that tends to be conflated, I think, with regards to Indonesia and the South China Sea. One is the South China Sea disputes themselves, and in this particular case, the Spratly Islands. As far as the disputed water goes, Indonesia is not a claimant in the dispute between the other countries like Vietnam and Malaysia and China, for that matter. The second problem, I think, is with regards to maritime law enforcement, where Chinese fishermen are often caught within Indonesia's exclusive economic zones. So we're trying to respond to the encroachment with regards to maritime law enforcement, but because we have international law on our side and because we're not staking a claim in the Spratly disputes, we're not confronting China with regards to the South China Sea disputes. In fact, we're simply ignoring their claim because they haven't made their specific claims with regards to our waters, but they have been making claims with regards to the fishing rights. So I think the fishery centers, the stronger maritime law enforcement, that's part of our response to the encroachment into our exclusive economic zones.
One of the things that I found interesting is that because of the trade war with the United States, it's become more difficult for China to trade with the U.S., and they've been looking for other overseas opportunities to trade. And Indonesia has actually turned out to be one of the best opportunities. So have the economic ties increased between China and Indonesia because of the U.S. trade war?
I think right now in Southeast Asia, both Vietnam and Indonesia, I think, are sort of competing to sort of exploit or gain advantage from the trade war. So we're not the only one that other countries are looking at. China's focus has always been on like a transportation industry and tourism. So maybe on the industry side of things, there's been talks, but right now it's still focused on resource extraction. Manufacturing is something that sort of we're competing with Vietnam on that front. So we're not sure yet if we are actually going to benefit from the trade war. We're thinking about it and we're planning about it, but we haven't seen the material benefits just yet.
If we compare this to a game of tug of war, do you think that right now the Chinese side is pulling closer in their direction at the expense of the United States?
If it's a single issue tug of war and one rope, I think yes. China is probably about 60-70% ahead of the U.S. But of course, the problem is that it's not just a single rope, right? That there's multiple issues and multiple ropes being played here. So I think on the economic front, I think China is certainly doing more of the pulling than the U.S. But on the other front, like security, for example, I think it's still a long way to go before China takes over the U.S. in that sense.
And of course, with the Belt and Road Initiative now, which China is investing in countries around the world, there are already some projects that are in the works. They haven't started yet, but they will start, and that will give China even more of an economic foothold in Indonesia.
Yes, I think if all of the commitments that are being discussed and planned under the Belt and Road Initiative between China and Indonesia are delivered, let's say, within the next 10 to 20 years, yes, I think China is set to be the most influential player in Indonesia.
That's Evan Laksmana, who is a senior researcher with the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Jakarta, Indonesia, and a visiting fellow at the National Bureau of Asian Research in Seattle. Evan, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
And you can find our whole series on China's growing influence in Asia at hereandnow.org.